Live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in. Friday's brought to you by our friend Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing here. Jaguars Today kicking off live at Everbank. You know, Tony, exactly 4 years from today, we're going to play, if this show is still going on, I'm sure it will be, of course. Are you kidding me? It'll be a juggernaut, ratings juggernaut, revenue-producing juggernaut. We'll be celebrating the Jags' second or third Super Bowl title, still Sweet. Basking in the glow. But exactly 4 years from today, we'll play Sgt. Pepper, because then it will have been 20 years ago today that Fred Taylor broke loose for a 90-yard run. All right, 16 years ago today, 62-7 went down. Jaguar fans, your finest postseason moment. Well, maybe not. Maybe you consider the upset of Denver or Buffalo a finer postseason moment, but that's a pretty big statement game right there, 62-7, as you usher Dan Marino and Jimmy Johnson into retirement, and Freddie T breaking loose in one of the great highlights in Jaguar history right there. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, you feeling good? You okay? You're in fighting trim today?
Good enough.
Good enough you're here.
Good enough to be here, yeah.
You broke out the nice blue jacket. That's top five pieces of apparel.
It's the rain jacket
that 1010XL has ever provided us, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's very nice, and it's what I wear whenever I know I'm going to be outside in the rain.
We used to work together at a different radio station, Tony, mm-hmm. and I believe occasionally we got T-shirts with a station logo on the pocket.
Yeah,
or
I think
something
so.
Like that. Occasionally,
maybe, yeah.
If we took them out of the prize closet here at 1010, you're wearing a splendid 1010XL long sleeve T-shirt with the rain jacket, the blue rain jacket. We've got some gear. There's no question about that. Today, we talk a little draft. Dane Brugler is going to stop by from NFLDraftScout.com. And we'll try to do this every Friday, have a different voice and opinion. Dane's coming out with his big board next week, but he's updated his mock draft, and we'll take a look at certainly where he's got some guys slotted, but more importantly, how he views the field of prospects, particularly with the kind of guys the Jags will be looking at. Get his thoughts on Jalen Ramsey and others, certainly, that have been part of the conversation already. Dave Caldwell pinch hitting last night for Gus Bradley. Final Gus Bradley show of the year, Tony. And much like me with Jaguars Today, he took the final one of the year off. That's what I did in 2015. Dave Caldwell pinch hitting, though. We've got some extensive comments from Dave that appeared last night, or you heard last night on 1010XL 92.5 FM. We'll bring you those throughout the course of the show. We'll talk with Johnny O a little bit later on, and we'll ask for your predictions. Pretty straightforward today for the question of the day, which four teams win this weekend. And if you get all four right, we'll throw your name in a hat, and we'll give away some T-shirts next week, and we'll see if we can scrape anything else out of the prize closet. I don't know what else is rattling.
I'm sure there's something there, yeah.
There may be something hanging out in there. But nevertheless, if you want at least a highly coveted Jaguars Today T-shirt, haven't given one away in a couple of weeks, then go ahead and tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and or at 1010XL Tyler.
And
you can also post on the and 1010XL. So, well, I was thinking, or maybe it is tweet it to you, Tyler, and not to us.
Oh, that would that's also an option. Also an option.
That's where the and or came in, right? It wasn't like tweet us.
I thought it was some sort of slight.
No, it was like, maybe you'll tweet Tyler. Maybe you don't like me. Maybe
it's easier on us.
Maybe I've blocked you.
Yeah, just send it to Tyler so that he can go through the winners this weekend so that we don't have to.
You know, as a matter of fact, that makes it really easy. But we'll accept them to any of the three Twitter accounts in case one of us, likely me, has blocked you. You're still eligible to win. Get all four right, and it's not that difficult, Tony. I gave you who I like right off the top with Jeff. Where are you agreeing, where are you disagreeing? You like Arizona?
I like Arizona. That's probably the strongest one, just what they did to Green Bay a couple weeks ago.
Sure.
I can't see that turning around in such a short time. I expect a better game than 38-7, but I don't know how much
it does
better.
Happen yeah. sometimes, but I'm with you.
It just felt like a bad matchup for Green Bay.
Right.
Watching that
they
game.
Couldn't handle Calais Campbell, yeah. among other things.
So I like Arizona. I like Seattle over Carolina.
Do you?
I do. And Seattle is just that team.
Sure.
It's so hard to knock them out. So I like Seattle over Carolina. I like Kansas City over New England. And I think Pittsburgh-Denver is going to be really ugly. I think it's going to be really ugly. Like, that feels like a 13-9 type playoff game where someone's going to have the ball at the end with a chance to win, and can their quarterback throw it 10 yards? I don't know. But given how good the Denver defense is, I give the slight lean to them.
So you're the only thing we differ on the Seattle-Carolina game. Devitt, what about you, Tyler? Who are your four winners this weekend?
I actually don't even know the exact schedule of the game, but I really like Seattle to win. I think I think my Super Bowl is going to end up being Arizona and New England. I think New England's going to make a run here. I think they're going to beat the Chiefs. I don't know about Chandler Jones and that defense, though.
All right, what about Denver and Pittsburgh?
Two bad quarterbacks. I'm going to go with Denver. And it's going to be a low-scoring game, like 10-7.
All right, so Seattle-Carolina.
Seattle-Carolina, I'm going to take Seattle in a squeaker. It's going to be like a...
All right, so you and Tony agree on yours, and I like Carolina over Seattle this weekend.
Whoever wins that Kansas City-New England game is going to the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
I agree with you there. And I'm calling my shot now. I told you back in, like, week 17, I thought had Pittsburgh been healthy, I really thought whoever emerged, either the Jets or the Steelers, had they been healthy in that spot, would have been one of the more dangerous teams because of the way each of them potentially could match up with New England.
Yeah.
I don't think Pittsburgh's going to get the opportunity. New England, it appears, may not get that opportunity, at least in our thinking anyway.
Now, Pittsburgh, it could get interesting. If they can get by Denver and get Antonio Brown back, that may change things if they match up against New England. But I just, with the injuries they have right now, I don't see them getting past that Denver defense.
Yeah, Pittsburgh played Kansas City early this year, but it was with Landry Jones at quarterback, so not a whole lot to draw from that. All right, coming up, we'll get to some comments from Dave Caldwell from yesterday on the season ender of the Gus Bradley Show. If you'd like to comment on anything you hear today, or if you want to just talk any aspect of Jaguar football or the National Football League, 641-1010. Is both the phone number and the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, so feel free to drop on by. Brought to you every Friday by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. It's Jaguars Today, live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, today, Tony, according to the wealth of information that Donna Murphy provides us on a daily basis, mm-hmm. is Strawberry Ice Cream Day, National Strawberry Ice Cream Day.
Okay.
In the United States of America. Favorite ice cream for you?
Oh, gosh.
One favorite. You can only have one. There can only be one. And I know you hate chocolate.
I'm not a big chocolate fan.
Communist.
I don't know.
Socialist or a communist? What are you?
I'm neither, to be honest with you. Funny, I was having that discussion with somebody the other day who didn't know the difference. I was like, no, there's a big difference.
There's quite a difference.
I don't know.
They hate chocolate.
Yeah.
They do have that in common.
I think that's requirement number one.
All right.
To be a
Beyond
communist.
That, what do you got? Come
there's
on.
Hate chocolate. I really don't know.
How can this be so hard?
I don't eat ice cream.
Fortunato,
like,
favorite ice cream flavor?
Fish food.
Whatever that is.
That's Ben and Jerry's fish food.
What is
with
that?
With the pH. I don't know what's in it. The fish food.
Well, I've got the graham crackers, right?
Get around to a microphone here, please, if you would. Does it have graham crackers in it?
I believe so. No.
Fortunato's going to straighten us all out. He wore his lumberjack outfit today. He's
good Friday morning.
How are you, Joey F? How are you, buddy?
Great, man.
What's in the fish
food? We're talking ice cream. Chocolate, marshmallow swirls, fudge swirls, and little chocolate fish.
All right. It sounds kind of like a Rocky Road-ish kind of
thing. Yeah,
without
the peanuts.
Are there peanuts in Rocky Road?
Peanuts in Rocky Road. Yeah,
there's something crunchy in there.
Could be graham crackers.
Hey, for me, I'll take anything with coconut in it.
Could be old toenails.
All right then.
How do you not like ice cream?
My man went off the rails.
How do you not like chocolate?
Right.
I just don't. For whatever reason, I've never really liked chocolate. Like,
what about a chocolate Wendy's Frosty? A chocolate Wendy's Frosty?
Yeah.
No.
If I got fries, that's fine.
Yeah, because he's got a dip. That's one of Tony's favorite fast food items. He thinks fries and a Frosty are a single item.
They ought to be.
We determined
I've never had a Frosty without fries. I've never done it. Because I just don't want one without fries.
Tyler Devitt, what's your favorite ice cream?
I kicked him out.
Oh, Murphy's here.
He mentioned Frosty, and that's not ice cream, so I kicked him out.
No, it's not really ice cream, but it's the same concept. It's frozen deliciousness. Today's Strawberry Ice Cream Day. Thanks for informing us.
No problem. That's my job.
What is your favorite ice cream?
I would go with the standard cookie dough.
All right.
I like cookies
cookie dough
and cream.
Standard now? Yeah. That was like a shocking revelation when I was like 20 or whenever they
cookies
came out with
cookies and
that.
Cream or like mint chocolate chip. It's probably my thing.
Mint chocolate chip. What is wrong with you?
I like mint chocolate chip.
I just don't understand that whole thing. I used to like it, I guess, a little bit when I was a kid, but good old regular chocolate chip with vanilla ice cream. Oh, fantastic. All right, somebody bring us some ice cream now, please. By the way, it would melt in about 2 seconds in here. Fortunato, what can you do about
the
thermostat, Joe?
It got up to 65, and now you guys down here turn up the heat?
It's the warmest day in 2 weeks, and we're melting down here at Everbank. But we love the fact that we get to be here on a daily basis, and we don't want to seem like we're not gracious and full of gratitude on a daily basis. So there you go. But I am sweating right now as we do the program. Let's get to Dave Caldwell. Is he sweating, Tony? He's a pretty cool customer.
He is.
I don't think he's sweating too much. He's ready to roll for this off season. And Dave was asked last night. He filled in for Gus Bradley on the Gus Bradley Show. And so we'll hear from some of those cuts right now. He updated, starting off with where things stand with the defensive coordinator search, as Donna Murphy scrambles through her stacks of ice cream cartons as she's trying to come up with that cut for us right now. It was a weird handoff right there that just occurred. Tyler got kicked out with some ice cream related foul that he pulled in the control room, and now Murphy's scrambling to find those cuts. So we'll come up with that in just a moment. All right, she's fantastic, ladies and gentlemen. Here's Dave Caldwell last night on 1010XL, updating where things stand in the defensive coordinator search.
Well, yeah, that's why I'm here tonight, because Coach Bradley is deep into interview process and interview mode. So he was we had a potential candidate in today, and I defer to Coach Bradley and our coaching staff on those decisions. But it seems like he's spearheading a very thorough search, and I think it'll be very clear to us the direction we go when we're done with the search.
Marquand Manuel also being looked at, Tony. A couple of position coaches here that don't have a ton, certainly not coordinator experience,
right,
in terms of Marquand Manuel, not a ton of coaching experience. It seems, as I was discussing with Ryan O'Halloran yesterday, that the plan is for Gus to bring in a guy who is going to run whatever it is that Gus wants to run, right? I mean, that he's not looking at the Mike Nolans and the Lovie Smiths of the world, who've got their own philosophies, their own systems, what have you. He's looking for a guy he can say, here's what I do, I want you to run it, you're going to get your opportunity to be a coordinator maybe for the first time. It seems like that's the path he's going down.
Yeah, and you wonder exactly how it's going to work as far as play calling and that kind of thing, if Gus is going to be more hands-on given the direction this hire looks like it's going in. So we'll see over the course of the next couple weeks exactly how that's going to shake out. One of the questions that I know a lot of fans have had in regards to the defensive coordinator search, Caldwell asked about this by Loggeman last night, is it detrimental for the search for a defensive coordinator that Gus only has 1 year left on his deal right now?
It's not a hurdle. And, you know, Gus's situation is very fluid. And although he's on a one-year contract now, it doesn't mean that necessarily moving into the season he'll be on a one-year contract either. So, you know, we just got to make sure we get the right pieces in place here. And then moving forward, those things will take care of itself. And so it's one of those things where I think across the league, coaches look at our ownership and they look at the pieces we have in place here. And this league at many spots is a one-year contract. As we've seen this year and in past years, guys come in, and even though they have a four-year contract, they only last 1 year. So
right,
it's a very result-oriented business. We're a little contrarian in our approach here and the way we've built this and trying to build this. And we want to make sure that the coach we bring in has every opportunity to succeed. And by bringing in a defensive coordinator and tying him in with Gus, won't be a problem moving forward.
All right, I didn't maybe catch the last 45 seconds of that.
Can we play the first 10 seconds again?
Hold on, please. You know Kenan Thompson on SNL,
yeah,
right? Do you know when he plays the director and he was had worked on the Jeffersons, and so everyone's doing these really serious scenes. He goes, no, I'd like you to play it like this. And he basically has everyone go,
yeah.
What?
Yeah.
play the first 10 or 15 seconds of that cut, please. We'll tell you when to cut it off.
It's not a hurdle. And, you know, Gus's situation is very fluid. And although he's on a one-year contract now, it doesn't mean that necessarily moving into the season he'll be on a one-year contract either.
All right. That's enough, I believe.
I don't know. What is it?
It doesn't mean necessarily that he won't be on a one-year, or that he'll be on a one-year contract heading into the season? You telling me a contract extension could be in the offing before the season? What else could that mean?
It's a weird comment.
I mean, would it be a situation where, what, they add a single year so he's not in the last year of his – what?
That doesn't make sense either.
That no. No, that makes no sense. What's our – at least it may – I understand the words and the meaning that those words have, so it makes sense like that. But what in the world? He may not be on a one-year contract heading into the season? Tony, is that slap me if I'm wrong. Did that not just come completely out of left field?
No, it really did, and I wonder, like, what does that mean to Dave Caldwell? Like, that he's not necessarily on a one-year deal going into the season either. Is it just the way he's looking at it, the way he's dealing with Gus? What does that mean? Exactly, because Gus Bradley has 1 year left on his deal in Jacksonville, and it hasn't been successful enough in Jacksonville to feel comfortable giving him an extension beyond that year right now.
How could you possibly justify giving an extension to a coach who's won 12 games in 3 years? I understand, but we believe the direction things are going. We're going to give Gus the opportunity to fulfill the contract that we signed him to, and we think things are trending in the right direction. Let's see if the defense can make a jump commensurate with what the offense did this year. And, all right, then we'll all be on board, and they're 9-7, and Gus has earned a new contract, and here we go, marching into a bright playoff-filled future.
That would be nice.
Stunning to me right there, that comment. I need further clarification.
I do too.
On that comment from Dave Caldwell. I tell you what, we're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour. We'll come back. We'll play some more of his comments last night. I have to digest that one. Doesn't mean just because Gus has got 1 year left on his deal doesn't mean, and I'm paraphrasing now, that he'll go into season with only 1 year left on his deal. That's stunning to me, quite frankly. It's Jaguars today. It is a First Coast Roofing Friday. I have just been hit upside the head with the Dave Caldwell sledgehammer,
yeah.
A verbal sledgehammer.
Toasted coconut.
Holy cow, toasted coconut's the bomb.
That's my favorite ice cream. I've had a few minutes to think about it.
Yeah. I threw anything with coconut out there, Fortunato. And
toasted coconut.
It's his favorite, and he doesn't know what it is. I don't understand
I very rarely have ice cream. Very, very, very rarely.
Toasted coconut is.
It's awesome.
Phenomenal.
Yes.
All right, we will step aside, come back with more. If you want to get in, 641-1010, more from Dave Caldwell as he filled in on the Gus Bradley Show last night, coming up on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
It's not a hurdle, and, you know, Gus's situation is very fluid, and although he's on a one-year contract now, it doesn't mean that necessarily moving into the season he'll be on a one-year contract either.
All right, stop, collaborate, and listen. Ice is back with my brand new adventure song.
Something.
This was a Donna Murphy
world?
Selection.
Someone redid Ice Ice Baby?
I don't know.
A guy named Marty Ray.
And I'll glow. That's hilarious to me. So somebody did a reggae version of Ice Ice Baby?
Apparently.
This is one of the weirdest things I've ever heard. This is a very strange day that we're having here on Jaguars Today this morning.
Must be a Friday.
Holy smokes. Shadrick, what is your favorite ice cream flavor, J.P. Shadrick? Chocolate. See, he didn't have to think about it. J.P.'s a smart guy.
That's cool.
Have you guys ever heard of Blue Moon?
Blue Moon?
It's like a blueberry.
Bar?
Blue Moon ice cream.
I've heard of the beer and the oyster bar.
Sounds like it has marshmallows in it.
It's like a blueberry marshmallow flavor. It's so good.
Look at Tony. Really, who makes it?
I think Blue Bell actually comes out with a little bit of it.
Blue Bell, Blue Moon.
Synergy.
Lovely. All right, moving on. I'm still trying to figure out what the scenario is where Gus doesn't go into the season with only 1 year left on his deal.
Do you want to replay that cut? You want to hear it again?
No, we've played it a few times. I mean, I've heard the words. I understand the meanings of the words that were spoken. I do understand the words that were coming out of his mouth.
Very confusing.
Holy smokes. Maybe we should play some more reggae Ice Ice Baby. It seems more
we're like a
natural.
Twilight Zone day.
It's very strange. Thank you. Collaborate and listen. All right, let's move along. Last night on the Gus Bradley Show, Dave Caldwell in for the head coach as Gus is working on vetting various defensive coordinator candidates right now. Dave Caldwell said that he didn't say who it was, but he did say last night that he brought in a former colleague to help evaluate the Jaguar roster.
I think at times we'll bring in other opinions. You know, we'll say let's see what Coach X has to say, or let's see what personnel person has to say. And at times we may meet with four or five other people and say, hey, this is what we're going through. What do you guys think about this? I know at one point in time I brought in a former colleague of mine to evaluate our roster about 12 weeks into the season, and just say, I said, I don't care how our players got here or what we paid them or where we drafted them. I just want your honest opinion of where they're at and how they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I said, sometimes I get so close to it, and our personnel people get so close to it, and our coaching staff get so close to it, that I would just like an honest opinion with no ulterior motives as to how player X is doing, how player Y is doing, and where you see him in the league. It was very, very good. And we sat down with Gus and some of our coaches and talked about his findings. Some of them we agreed with, some of them we disagreed with, but that's the nature of the personnel business.
So there's some things I like in this answer here, Tony. One, you know, I don't care where we paid him, how we acquired him. Let's talk about what they're doing for us right now, right? That's the way you've got to be, like that. And we understand that we don't live in some Pollyanna world where there aren't some political attachments to where you go in the draft. So, you know, you're a high draft pick. You're going to get more opportunity than a low draft pick or an undrafted guy to prove yourself. But I like the fact that Dave Caldwell is doing that. I like the fact that he is humble enough to say, you know what, I don't always have all the answers. Sometimes another pair of eyes and another way of thinking about it and brainstorming
about
it.
Well, I don't have all the answers, and acknowledging that you can be too close to it.
Yes.
Like, it's your guy.
Right,
it's,
I drafted
your
Luke Jokel.
Right. So somebody else may occasionally have to tell me, no, it's not working. You know, I because we've all experienced that at some point in our lives, doing something where it was yours and maybe you didn't see the flaws in it that everyone else could see.
My guess, I think the logical guess, and I could be 100% wrong, I have no way of knowing who this is other than by making an educated guess, is maybe it's Bill Polian, right? I mean, his son Chris is on staff here in Jacksonville. You're not going to bring in a guy who's attached to another team, right? They're not going to be – that's a conflict of interest, you would think. Like, hey, let me get somebody from my Atlanta days to come on down and – help me evaluate the roster. I don't think that's
I can't see Thomas Dimitroff
or anyone else, you know,
roster,
under
right.
him in the Atlanta front office whose names I would not know. I just wonder, that makes me wonder, is it Polian who did that, or whoever it is, certainly somebody that Dave Caldwell trusts his opinion on. And,
sure.
You know, I don't have an issue with that. You know, let's not be pigheaded about, you know, we have all the right answers, right? Let's bring in some thoughts, and ultimately the buck stops with the general manager. He's the one who has to make the decisions, but I don't have a problem with him going out there seeking out more information and evaluation.
Absolutely not. Dave Caldwell last night on the Gus Bradley Show also talked about the opportunities for Doug Marrone and Chris Polian getting some job interviews around the league.
Unfortunately, Chris did not get the job in Tennessee. I think they named the general manager today.
John Robinson,
very qualified candidate. And, you know, Chris is we're happy to have him here. He's a vital part of our personnel department, does a great job on a pro side and oversees some of our college scouting. So that's been really good. And then Doug Marrone is our O-line coach. So it's a good sign when other teams are looking at what the Jaguars are doing, whether it's coaching or personnel. As a matter of fact, we're going to have a personnel chief here leave in the next day for a very good promotion too on our side of the building. And
back up. You're going to have somebody leave your staff for very good promotion.
Yeah, very well deserved.
That's great.
Yeah.
No names.
No names. Today.
Okay.
No
can't names, can't release that today.
Can't release that today.
Okay,
yeah.
That's good.
So, but it's very well deserved and a good situation. So. That's good. You know, we want to have upward mobility. Obviously, we'd like to have it here if there's availability to do it, but we have some great personnel people on our staff currently that can fill those voids too.
Well, you know, look,
that turned out to be Kyle O'Brien, by the way,
yeah,
who was just hired here in the last couple minutes as the director of player personnel with Detroit.
Right, and congrats to him.
Yeah.
For getting the job. And I don't want to stand in anybody's way from advancing, right? We all want opportunities in life, and that's, you know, part of having a career that, you know, you hope you take steps where people appreciate the work you do and you get better opportunities down the road. I didn't like And I don't like the idea of Chris Polian going to work for the Titans. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I don't like anybody who's privy to the ways of thinking the Jaguars have on evaluating players or any of that stuff going to work against you in the division. Now, that's sometimes the life of in the National Football League in the front office. And, you know, Chris Polian may, in fact, become a general manager one day. Maybe it'll be next year in the next cycle of hirings. But I hope it's not in the division, you know. And quite frankly, I hope Doug Marrone isn't the head coach of the Tennessee Titans. And I wonder if he won't be the head coach of the Tennessee Titans, Tony, for this reason that, you know, Terrell Austin, certainly a very qualified candidate. And, you know, Malarkey is going to get an interview with John Robinson, they say. But Doug Marrone's name just keeps coming up. He's so well-respected around the league, at least enough to get considered over and over by multiple outlets. Miami, different places. The Giants were said to be thinking about him. A lot of people thought he would immediately get a job last year. He didn't. And as I said, I think that Rex Ryan going in there, arguably upgrading the talent, particularly a quarterback, and having a worse record than Marrone left them with the year before, works in his favor. We'll see how that works out. I hope he's back. But you do like seeing that people that are part of this organization are getting opportunities. That means that they're being singled out for the good work that they're doing. I understand all that needs to show up on the field with the record, but that doesn't mean there isn't good work being done, even though the team went 5-11 last year. So you hope that's an indicator that that's getting recognized, and you hope the Jags, at least I hope, they can keep enough of these guys together to have it benefit them and not some other team in the National Football League. Dave Caldwell asked last night by Jeff Loggeman how important it is when you're acquiring players to match a coach's style with the personnel you're bringing in.
Well, I think that the coach should define the personnel. You know, when you have a head coach, he should define what he's looking for, and you should do your best to give him the tools to succeed. And with personnel, if you have some existing pieces in place and you feel like that the coach you bring in can manage what you have, and then you add to it, that seems like a very reasonable thought process to do it. And what they did in San Francisco, it seems like that's a pretty reasonable move of what they did. So that's the hard part. When you really want to change things over and you have this personnel of a 4-3 defense, and then all of a sudden you said, you know what, let's go to a 3-4 and complete different approach and philosophy. That's challenging. You better have a really good other side of the ball to keep you afloat until you get those pieces in place, because it's not a one off season fix.
I think what he's saying with the pairing in San Francisco, a lot of people say, hey, that Colin Kaepernick fits the style of quarterback. Whether he's the ideal quarterback, his style seems to fit what Chip Kelly did at Oregon and attempted to do with some read plays. That, remember that whole talk in the preseason, Tony, Sam Bradford, they're like, oh, he's never going to run the ball, right? He's always going to give it, but you're going to get smashed occasionally as a quarterback. Colin Kaepernick was the kind of guy you could run some read option with. I don't think it's something you want to build your entire offense around in the National Football League, but if you have Colin Kaepernick and he is your quarterback, why wouldn't you want to take advantage of his running ability? It may be the best thing that he does right now. Obviously, you want to ultimately win from the pocket, but Colin Kaepernick helped get that team to the Super Bowl. That was a good team around him, but he helped get them to the Super Bowl playing an unconventional style. And I'm at least interested to see what Chip Kelly does with them out there in San Fran.
Certainly. One more call we'll cut here, and then we'll hopefully get back to some of his player evaluation a little bit later on, specifically on the defensive side of the ball, and the safety position is zeroed in on. But Caldwell was asked by Loggeman the advantage of coaching in the Senior Bowl.
We get to put them through a typical Jacksonville Jaguar week of work, and from meetings to taking them from the meeting room to on the field to learning our system. So it helps us not only pinpoint the guys that we really feel like are good fits for our team, but also eliminate the guys that we feel like aren't good fits for our team. And
probably easier to find that than it is the other, right?
Yeah, that is true. And so it allows us to knock out a lot of work that we normally do at the combine. Like we do interviews at the combine. Well, a lot of these guys that are going to the combine, well, we knock out the interviews there, so there's no sense in us doing it there. In the spring, we go to do college workouts and do that. Well, we're coaching them for a week of practice. We don't need to go to watch them run around without any pads on. So it just really gets us ahead of the curve on the work schedule for the draft, and gives us a deep insight look on a guy for a week. You might be able to fake a 15-minute interview. You might be able to fake an hour workout, but it's hard to fake it for a whole week. And so it's very telling for us, some of these guys, and we've had success with it too, so it's been good.
All right, interesting there, and you know, it's not just necessarily about who is there at the Senior Bowl that you may draft them, Tony, but it cleans up the process. Maybe you realize, you know what, I'm not going to waste time on this particular guy. I don't like this guy. Or like you said, you know, if it's a school with kind of a one prospect type pro day, you know, that you might be interested in, if you already worked with him for an entire week at the Senior Bowl, well, that's one less trip you need to make for your scouting staff. And as we know, there are always multiple pro days, some of them on the same day, and he can get stretched a little bit thin. So, you know, there are definitely benefits to it. Is it, you know, the difference between going to the Super Bowl or not? Well, the Jags are going for the third year in a row, so I would say no. But definitely you can get a little bit of an insight. And if it helps you in your evaluation of one guy that ends up on your roster, it's not the worst thing in the world. We'll come back to State and Football, the Honda Drive around the NFL. Then Dane Brugler from NFLDraftScout.com, CBS Sports, will join us talking a little draft coming up next on Jaguars Today on a First Coast Roofing Friday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, draft talk with Dane Brugler just minutes away. This date in football history, first, 1939, the first NFL Pro Bowl was played. And the Pro Bowl's had a lot of different formats over the years. Tony, you want to guess who won the first NFL Pro Bowl?
NFC.
The New York Giants.
Of course, the New York Giants
beat the All-Stars 13-10 in Wrigley
Field.
Super
Bowl champion or the champion?
The NFL champion, I suppose, played against the collection of the rest of them. I guess that's the way it went. That's been the case throughout the years. It's differed. You know, they had the college All-Stars play the NFL guys and on.
Can you imagine trying to convince the entire Super Bowl winning team to go play another game afterwards?
Right. Well, they probably back then they were eager to do it because it probably meant another paycheck.
Right.
In an era where they weren't making a bunch of money. 1967, Super Bowl I played on this date, and they're going to replay it tonight. They've pieced it together. NFL Network's going to air it for the first time. Green Bay knocked off Kansas City. Spoiler alert, 35-10, Bart Starr, the MVP. 1978, the first Super Bowl played indoors. The Dallas Cowboys beat the Denver Broncos 27-10 in the New Orleans Superdome. The MVPs were Harvey Martin and Randy White of the Cowboys, which was a hell of a birthday for Randy White as he was turning 25 years old that very day. Happy 63rd now to Randy White, 9-time Pro Bowler, 7-time first-team All-Pro. Kenny Easley, born on this date, the safety, only played 7 years in the NFL, but a 5-time Pro Bowler himself and a 3-time first-team All-Pro. And Drew Brees, born in this date, turns 37 years old, 9-time Pro Bowler for the New Orleans quarterback. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The Pittsburgh Steelers have ruled wide receiver Antonio Brown out for their divisional round game against Denver on Sunday. Now we all wait with bated breath for the apology of Adam Pac-Man Jones to Brown for accusing him of faking his injury last weekend, and Brown probably has to give back his Grammy Award as well. Only the Tennessee Titans head coaching job remains open. Detroit chose to stick with Jim Caldwell. Philadelphia is now waiting for the Kansas City Chiefs to end their playoff run before they can officially announce the Chiefs offensive coordinator Doug Peterson will be their next head coach. San Francisco has signed Chip Kelly to a $24 million deal to take over as their head man, and as expected, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have officially promoted offensive coordinator Dirk Cutter to the head coaching position. The Giants doing the same, with Ben McAdoo being introduced at a press conference this morning as the new head coach of the New York Giants.
All right, let's belly up to the Metro Diner check counter.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner chat counter.
These are delicious.
On 1010XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
All right, Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you on Jaguars Today. We welcome in for the first time in 2016, Dane Brugler of CBS Sports and NFLDraftScout.com. What's up, Dane? How are you, buddy?
Doing well. How are you guys doing today?
We're hanging in there.
What do you do before January? Like, when everyone starts calling you to talk draft, what are you doing, like, during the season?
Oh, it's, you know, really, scouting 365. It really is. And, you know, with the draft as popular as it is, there are some fan bases and teams that are looking towards the draft in, you know, August. So it's a fun thing to do to, you know, over the summer, start to prep for these seniors throughout the season, kind of, you know, see the evolution of these prospects. And then by January, you know, here we are, you know, I feel like we have a good grasp on what this draft's going to look like. So feel very prepared for January.
You know, Dane, I just got a tweet from a listener named Ian Smith. He said, you know, do you think fan bases of winning teams look forward to the offseason activity as much as losing franchises? He said he asked because he loves the draft and all the free agency talk as well. My guess is no. You know, I think one of the appeals of when you're a team picking in the top 10 is you can narrow down the list of options and you have a pretty good idea of who might be available to your team and what their needs are. So you feel like you have a better shot at actually predicting who that pick is going to be. Do you get that? Do you get more feedback from teams or fans of teams that are struggling and have higher picks in the draft?
Yeah, no question about it. We know the top 10. We know the top 20 draft picks. And a lot of teams they've known they're picking top 10 for a while now. But then you have teams like the Broncos, the Patriots, the Panthers. They don't even know where they'll be picking in the draft yet. So they're thinking playoffs right now. But a lot of these teams, a pick in the top 10 is a signal of hope. It's a signal of, you know, we're going to get better. So it's really a fascinating thing to watch.
The Jags have a top five pick again. We'll get into where you think they're going with that pick here in just a moment, Dane. But with the Tennessee Titans getting the number one overall draft pick, there's already discussion about what they should or shouldn't do with that pick. Joey Bosa tops a lot of people's big boards, and that is still a need for Tennessee, trying to find somebody that can rush the passer. I know you have Laremy Tunsil going number one overall to Tennessee in your latest mock draft. Why Tunsil over Bosa?
Well, I think if you look at the Titans and their priority right now, it needs to be to protect Marcus Mariota. It needs to be to keep their franchise quarterback upright and healthy. And so in order to do that, they need to get more protection up front. They need to find out a way to protect Mariota.
Uh-oh, we lose Dane, Tyler?
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
I think he might have fell out. We'll get him back up here in a second and get him on board. I think he just
That was the pop of death right there.
Well, I'm curious because, and certainly, I understand his rationale. You got a franchise quarterback, you want to protect that franchise quarterback, right? And you want to build and give him pieces around that, which, again, makes it interesting to me when you look at the left tackle situation here. Do they feel like Blake Bortles is adequately protected? But they certainly, when they drafted Blake, they tried to put pieces around him in terms of playmakers, Tony. They went out and they drafted wide receivers, they signed a free agent tight end, and then they drafted a running back the next year, and we've seen that. That's been typical. Peyton Manning, same thing in Indianapolis. They got Peyton in. They already had Marvin Harrison. Then they started adding pieces, whether it was on the offensive line or skill position guys. I wonder, and hopefully we'll get Dane back up here in just a second, I wonder outside of Bosa and Tunsil, who, if anybody, unless it's maybe a quarterback that somebody tries to trade up ahead of Cleveland to get their hands on, who is even worthy in some of these pundits' mind, you know, the number one overall
pick? I haven't heard many names outside of that.
Right. How big is the list? Josh Norris of Roto World has Miles Jack, the UCLA linebacker, atop his big board. I don't know how likely a candidate he would be for the number one pick when you've got pass rush and left tackle and guys that seem to grade out as worthy top five selections. It would be hard for me to imagine that former running back, now linebacker, who's coming off an injury plagued season, basically a lost season, would top that kind of guy at the top of the board.
No, I would think so too. And it's curious talking to these guys over the course of the next couple months, just where the evaluation is, not only with who else could possibly be the number one pick, but the evaluation between Tunsil and Bosa, because they are playing, obviously, on different sides of the ball. They're both super valuable positions in the league. How much of a drop-off is there beyond those guys? And just, are they the two guys that are clearly the top two prospects in the 2015 NFL or 2016 NFL draft, and that's why they're the guys that are being discussed one and two, or is it based on the needs for the Tennessee Titans?
And the needs and the importance of positions, are they being shot up the board
since they already have the quarterback?
Right, exactly. And, even if not, I mean, I don't know how these quarterbacks – I think you're going to see a variety of teams evaluating the quarterbacks differently. We may never know, but I have a feeling there's not going to necessarily be that one consensus guy. Jared Goff seems to be the guy most people pencil in if you're putting a quarterback, the guy out of Cal, in with the number two pick with the Cleveland Browns. But we've seen Paxton Lynch. We've seen this kid Wentz out of North Dakota State start to get some love. Mel Kiper's got him in his first-round mock. First time I've seen that.
So Tony Pauline mentioned last week,
right,
too.
So, I mean, but I don't think any of these guys necessarily are the type that you mortgage the future to make a move up. If you're in position like Cleveland, fine. You may take the quarterback. I don't know if anyone's going to pay what it would cost to get to number one. So that's the thing. You'd love to see somebody slide into that number one spot and take a QB and have Cleveland follow suit. And that pushes just one more position player down. Even if you're set on Jalen Ramsey being the guy, then you could say, all right, Bosa and Tunsil in some order at 3 and 4, and you're going to get your guy. And if Ramsey goes, either one of those guys to me would be a tremendous consolation prize. In fact, I'd prefer Bosa over anybody as it stands right now.
Yeah, and you heard Dave Caldwell, and we'll get back to his comments a little bit later on the show last night on the Gus Bradley show as well, saying that defensive end pass rush isn't necessarily the number one need for them going into this offseason or the draft or whatever. It may not be the priority to get that guy at number five, basically, is how I heard that comment. And the question becomes, if it's not Joey Bosa available to you at five, if you're looking for pass rush in this draft, you see names like DeForest Buckner, the defensive end out of Oregon,
right,
being listed up there as a top 10 prospect, and a couple other guys kind of get mentioned maybe towards that top 10 area. But is DeForest Buckner worth a top 5 draft pick?
Right. Is he, or is he there because of the position and the importance,
right,
of that position?
Shaq Lawson's a guy who gets mentioned. I'm not sure.
More around that kind of that 10 range.
Right.
But you see him once in a while in a mock draft going 7th. Something like that. Let's play a few Dave Caldwell cuts. Is right now having trouble reaching out to Dane Brugler and getting him back on board. So hopefully we'll be able to get that straightened out before we go off the air today. But let's jump ahead to him talking about Dante Fowler, because all this is going to flow together. And last night, Dave Caldwell phoned in for Gus Bradley on the Gus Bradley Show with Jeff Loggeman. Loggeman asked Caldwell to update Dante Fowler's rehab status for us.
He's doing really well. He was out there running yesterday. Looked good. I think they did a 12 60-yard sprints and really looks good physically. Really training hard with Tom Mislinski, our strength and conditioning coach, and doing his rehab. And very strong, powerful guy, man. I tell you what, feel really good about where he's at and where he's heading. He just needs to continue to be consistent with it from now on until the off-season program starts. But no setbacks for him quite yet.
That's good to hear. Dave Caldwell went on to say that they demanded a lot of Dante Fowler, even during this lost season for him while he was recovering from that ACL.
We were, I shouldn't say we were hard on him, but we were demanding of what we asked him to do this year. And where most guys have a season-ending injury, they just, go to rehab, or they might go back to their hometown and rehab. Well, we asked him to be here every day, every morning, 6:45, get his treatment done, go to his team meeting at 8:15, go to special teams meetings, go to his positional meetings, get his workout in, and break down the opposing team's offensive line for 17 weeks. So he went through a full season plus doing rehab with no reward, and that being game day. So it was a challenge for him, and he hung in there. But we were demanding on him, so most guys in his position wouldn't have to do that. But we know the asset we have in him, and we know how good he can be. So we want to make sure that he got the most out of this year.
I guess I would ask, why wouldn't they have to go through that? This is your job now, right? You're not going to be practicing. So instead of practicing, you do all these other things that everyone else is doing. And while they practice, you rehab. And it's, you're a football player. I mean, as like Dave Caldwell said, without the reward of being able to play on game day, it's curious to me why any rookie of, highly drafted that's injured on any team wouldn't be put through a similar kind of set of circumstances.
Well, I don't know if rookie being drafted that high is what he was intending, or if it's like Sendarek Marks, right? Marks goes out for the rest of the year. Does he still have to go do team meetings and the game film and all that kind of stuff? Or do they trust that when he gets back, he knows how to handle himself like a pro? And Dante, it's more like they're trying to form the habits they're going to need him to have.
Oh, that's a good point.
In year two.
But wouldn't you want to have any young player? Because a lot of guys come into the league, and sometimes you have a lost season very early on. You go on IR, whatever the case. I would think so.
Yeah.
Every team would want to put guys in that kind of position. Dave Caldwell continuing on, talking about Dante Fowler's versatility, says, is he's more potentially than just a Leo pass rusher.
Not only is he a very good edge rusher, but he's very versatile too. So even if we got one or two or how many rushers we have, that would just open up the possibilities for us on defense on how we use Dante. He can play in a 2-point stance. He can line up in the A gap. He could put his hand down and be a three technique and as a sub rusher. He was a defensive tackle when he was a freshman at Florida anyway. So he's got a very broad skill set where he's going to be versatile enough where even if we get another Leo or if we get whatever we get, he's going to be able to help us no matter where.
I mean, isn't that kind of what you want in a Leo, right? You want the versatility to move him around, find the best matchup, right?
Sure.
And be able to line up at different spots. All right, and then I guess the last point here, Caldwell was asked by Loggeman, is it safe to assume that edge rusher, acquiring more edge rush on this football team, is the number one priority for this offseason?
I would not assume that, but it would be if we think Dante's an edge rusher, you know, that could be fill a need there, but I wouldn't assume it, but I would say that there will be there'll probably be an influx of edge rushers.
Yeah, all right. So I don't know if I read into that he wouldn't necessarily take an edge rusher at five. He might not. No. A lot of people think Jalen Ramsey. It's got to – the value has to match up. I think it would be fascinating to me if he had his choice of any player in this draft, which direction would he go? Now, we don't know what they're going to do in free agency, what they're going to be able to accomplish, Tony. I don't know if you're going to be able to bring in many quality edge rushers there. But as Dave said, they're going to bring in some. They've got to beef up that position. You can't count on Dante Fowler alone to be the answer to getting after the quarterback in 2016. All right, we'll continue to try to get hold of Dane Brugler, get him back. A little bit bummed about that. Always love the draft talk on a Friday. But coming up next, we'll spend some time with our buddy John Osier from Jaguars.com, get his thoughts on some of the things Dave Caldwell had to say as we head into the weekend. We'll see if we can get Dane a little bit later on in the hour. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith on a Friday, brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. Here, it's Jaguars Today, live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
He said, who needs Dane Brugler?
That's right. Dane who?
When you got Johnny O, senior writer. Jaguars.com. Much more coveted
position. Dane's a good guy. He does a good job.
He's a good guy. And look, none of these guys is the gospel when it comes to draft evaluation, but neither
of them,
no one is.
If you look at them all, you can get a feel. That's what I always tell people. If you look at the 10 or 15 guys, and maybe not even that many, 7 or 8 who really know what they're doing, over time you do get a general feel. And then what's funny is even with that general feel, the draft always sort of goes in a weird direction because all it takes is one thing going different than everybody thinks. All it takes is one team sort of being out there a little bit. And that's what makes it fun. I mean, the draft is fun probably unless you're actually doing the draft.
Yeah. You know, but you don't know.
Right.
It's one of those things where you know you have a general idea, and by the time we get to the draft, I'll feel like I know a lot about a lot of these players
right.
that are being talked about in the top 10 or 15. So I'll have some general idea of where I think they right. will land or should land, but it is. It's not going to go the way you think it's going to go
right.
in your head. Heck, 2 years ago in Jacksonville, Blake Bortles?
Right.
I mean, I know Hayes had it in the paper, but there really wasn't a whole lot of talk
like
about
Bolton.
Right.
But he guessed right.
Right.
Yeah, that's
right.
There wasn't
exactly
a ton
right.
of Blake is coming to Jacksonville talk
no.
before the night of that draft, which explained the fans' reaction. It happens. Even in the top five, somebody is probably going to surprise you with what they do.
All right, Johnny, let me play a little audio cut. You may have heard this. We were talking about this. Dave Caldwell last night on the Gus Bradley Show.
Right.
Okay. Tyler, you got this for me, please. Just the first part.
This is the one where he talks.
The answer.
Yeah, how great I am.
Yes, this after going on for about 3 minutes about how great you are.
Right.
He then
okay. So you just leave that part out.
Change subject.
Just,
okay, well, gotcha. I mean,
what was your question again?
Knew that.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But he was asked by Jeff Loggeman, is it difficult with Gus Bradley being in the final year of his contract to attract good candidates? Is it hard to find a defensive
sure.
coordinator who wants to come in this situation? And this is how Dave Caldwell started his answer.
It's not a hurdle, and Gus's situation is very fluid, and although he's on a 1 year contract now, it doesn't mean that necessarily moving into the season he'll be on a 1 year contract either.
You can stop there. What is it? It doesn't mean he'll necessarily be on a 1 year contract. Is Dave Caldwell trying to prep us for the idea that Gus Bradley could get a contract extension before the season starts?
Well, I assume that's what that means.
What else could it mean?
Right. So
he's not going to fire him.
Perhaps. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's fluid in that direction, certainly. Yeah.
Right. It's, I mean, you would, if you're going to move on, you would have done that already. So you've made the decision to move forward with Gus for 2016. And as Shad Khan said, though, you know, expectations are going to go up considerably. I mean, I know it's not an ideal situation to have a coach coaching in the final year of his deal, as you saw with Chuck Pagano in Indianapolis.
Right. I do not pretend to have spoken to Shad Khan or know what he's thinking about that. On the one hand, I can happen with another coach who was in a relatively similar situation this offseason where they extended him. Aren't they all kind of fluid in the sense that, you know, okay, they extend him a year, and then if it doesn't go well, if you're planning on firing, okay, you pay him for another year. But all these guys are fluid right now, if you follow me. I mean,
yeah, but I understand. You can say it's all fluid to a degree, but the
there's no guarantee. You just fire him and pay him.
Right, but for you fire him and pay him, but boy, I mean, it just seems to me like what is the impetus to do that? You know, if you're going to have kind of the litmus test for a significant improvement this
perhaps
year, why do you do that before the test is taken?
Again, it's a little odd that if it was going to happen, they wouldn't have happened already. I mean, if you're going to do it, why wait? On the other, if you're trying to do it to attract coordinators, I don't know.
Oh, I don't think it's about attracting coordinators. Right. I don't think it's that, or because they've already done the process. For all we know, they'll hire a guy today, for all we know, right? I mean, so I don't think it has anything to do with that in terms of that. It was just the fact that it seemed like the possibility was open that, hey, you know, Gus is on a one-year deal now, but don't be surprised if by September that's not the case. And as we said, he's going to be here, so the only other alternative is he has more years on his deal, which I think would – be stunning to a lot of the fan base.
It would.
So are you surprised that that's a possibility? I mean, that caught me pretty off guard.
I guess I'm always hesitant when something is said that quickly to know what he's thinking behind the thought, if that makes sense, or what his thoughts behind the words are, and he didn't really elaborate on it. It would be surprising in that situation. On the other hand, if they're looking at it and saying, boy, it caused a big issue in Indianapolis, that's not the way we want to go, then maybe they're a little concerned about that. I really don't know.
I don't either. Yeah. Ocho Fisho, a frequent tweeter, said, Shad agreed to keep Gene Smith for 3 years, only lasted one, paid the remaining two not to work. I get it. Guys all the time get fired with years remaining on their contracts. Not often do they get extended when they haven't won many games as a head coach going into the final year of their deal when the owner has come out and said, you know, basically the bar has to be raised significantly for this next season. And before the season is played out and you don't know if you're even going to approach the bar, why you would be looking to, you know, attack, unless you feel like, hey, could Gus play out the season? What if he did? What if they went 10-6? Does he become a hot commodity? Gus doesn't strike me as the kind of guy that would be like, you know, as long as you're going to pay me a fair market value deal, that he would build this for 4 years and then say, well, now my stock's hot, I'm going to go hop to this opening over here. It doesn't seem like it seems like Gus is going to be loyal as well, because I think Shad Khan and Dave Caldwell have shown a lot of loyalty his way.
Yeah, I don't think I would be stunned if the scenario played out where they went 10-6 and all of a sudden, Gus Bradley's holding Shad.
Right, exactly. To me, it's like, do you need
It was such a quick statement by Dave.
But he's a thoughtful guy, man. I don't think he just puts that out there without having considered what he said. I don't think it's spur of the moment, hey, you know what, here's an idea I haven't thought of before. You know what
I
mean?
No, but I don't know. It was difficult in that to know what scenario would have to happen to make that happen, what the thought process is.
Oh, I understand. That's having heard it.
It's certainly not the norm, but I'd hate to pretend to know exactly why they would do that or why they would. I don't know the thought process they put into it.
I got you.
I wish I did.
All right. Well, so do
I. Maybe that's Dane Brewer.
Just came up. Maybe. Well, you know, I'd love to if he'd answer his damn phone. It's ringing and ringing and ringing. I'll ask Dave the next time I see him.
Sure.
And I'm sure. Look, Dave's a very open guy about this kind of stuff. The fact that your GM is willing to go on there and answer questions to that degree of detail is a credit to him. I think it's fantastic. You know, he also made a comment that during the season after week 12 or during week 12, he brought in a former colleague of his to evaluate the roster. Mm-hmm. My educated guess is Bill Polian seems like a logical candidate because his son is on staff here. I wouldn't imagine you'd bring in someone who's currently attached with another NFL team. That would seem like a conflict of interest. So it's somebody who's formerly a front office type guy. And regardless, I just think it speaks well for Dave Caldwell that he admitted, hey, sometimes you can be too close to the situation. And I, you know, putting aside where these guys were drafted, what we're paying them, just give me a raw, brutal evaluation of how they stack up as NFL players. I have no issue with it. In fact, I'm happy that he did do it.
Yeah, he's always been, as you say, thoughtful is probably the way to go, transparent. I don't get the idea that's completely unusual for somebody to do. The fact that he is and always has been willing to sort of show people the thought process behind what he does is sort of what makes him unique. I mean, it's a very, within reason, a very open process that they run here. And it does help fans understand what's going on. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if that was Bill. I don't know that it was, but I know they're close enough where that could happen.
Yeah, I don't, like I said, I don't know that was him either, but it just seems like whether it was Polian or anybody else, the idea of doing something like that, I think, is that's a guy who says, hey, I'm not going to let my ego get in the way. You know, if you're a guy who's always, well, what are they going to think? What are they? I don't think he operates that way.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're getting at. He's very open, and I think Gus is too, to, hey, if I made a mistake, tell me. If we're not going in the right direction, tell me, and figure it out as the process is going on. And sometimes people don't want to hear if they've made a mistake, don't want to hear criticism. Dave really doesn't. He has pretty thick skin on that front.
What's Dave Caldwell's contract status, by the way? Has he got two more years left on his deal? He signed a five. What?
I thought he had one more than Gus, but I may be mistaken.
Yeah, I'll have to, let's see. Five-year deal. Five-year deal is what he got. So that, yeah, one. So yeah, he's a couple more seasons, and you know, things go a pace you would expect. You know, typically these kind of things, with a year left on the deal, that's when extensions come into play. So that's just, I was curious.
And I think, you know, in terms of Dave, I think you look at it, the roster is certainly better. The core is certainly coming together. The relationship with Shot, he's talked about it openly. It's been interesting the last few weeks to hear them all talk about the relationship between Gus, Dave, and Shad. It's all in sync. They just need to win.
No question.
I mean, that's not rocket science.
No, it's not. But right. And one other thing he talked about, Jeff Logman asked him about last night, was, you know, is edge rush, is it safe to say an edge rusher is your number one priority?
I like the influx quote.
Well, an influx of edge rushers, yeah.
There's going to be a faucet somewhere you just turn on.
Well, he's been a little bit coy, but I think he's saying, I think the way he's answering it is, in my mind, hearing it is like, hey, when you're talking about the number five pick, we're not necessarily taking a pass rusher.
Right.
For one thing, free agency's got to play out first. We're going to bring in edge rushers. Then we're going to evaluate how do we feel about the ones we were able to acquire. Where does Dante Fowler fit now that we have these guys?
Right.
You talked about Fowler's flexibility, the different positions he could play, even playing a little bit of linebacker.
Right,
which,
that was really interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting stuff.
And that gives them the flexibility, obviously, if they go out and they sign a guy that all of a sudden they say, hey, this guy is a pure Leo edge rusher, whoever that may be. And then the question comes around, well, if he's that, what does Dante do? Well, Dante can do X, Y, Z. Dante doesn't have to do that. So you're not necessarily signing a guy and putting somebody on the bench. You're signing a guy, and now you've got two guys who can play. So I think that's what they see Dante Fowler as a guy who, yes, can help you in the pass rush, but can also be very good in other spots because they need more than just one spot.
Yeah, O'Halloran ran the numbers on a different bunch of categories this week for the Jaguars this year. I would, for me, the ideal thing would be, I think Jared Odrick led the team in snaps this year. Sometimes your edge rusher types, I know Odrick is a defensive end, or primarily defensive end, but the guys who are really counted on as being the pass rush providers, whereas Odrick's side is concerned about, you know, occupying blockers, you know, playing the run, different things, and rushing
well,
as well.
He also moved inside to play the three.
Correct.
In a lot of situations.
That's why I said primarily, because he did.
Had Sin been healthy, he probably wouldn't have had to do that quite
right, and his snaps were pretty high. But I think ideally where you see Branch and Clemens, you just whack, you know, they're among, I think, maybe the second and third highest in terms of the defensive line snaps.
Right.
That you want Fowler to replace one of those numbers. That would be ideal. Can he hold up to that level of workload where he can approach, you know, 550, 600 snaps, whatever it is?
Yeah, because you want him on the field. He's an impact guy even beyond being an edge rusher. So you want him on the field in as many situations as possible.
Good write-up by Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union on this. One thing that caught my eye, turnovers is always one of the key statistics. Mm-hmm. But in games where the Jags – either were even in turnovers or won the turnover battle, they were 4-3 this year. That's a pretty telling statistic there, you know, and the rest of the time they went 1-8.
Yeah, it's
Isn't that right?
Yeah, it's okay.
Did I add that up right?
You did. I thought at first you did.
I know you did.
I always struggled with math.
It's right in front of me in black and white, too. I had to look down to double check to see if I was right about that.
You did. You weren't real confident in yourself.
I wasn't. No, I threw out 1-8, maybe. I don't know. But, look, if there's a single telling statistic in all of football, that may be the one.
Well, and that, I've always said, stems from when you can't rush the passer, then you are probably not going to force turnovers the way you'd like to. Because if you think about last year when they rushed the passer a little better, didn't get a lot of interceptions, but the games where they felt like they were good on defense was when they were getting sack fumbles. And they really didn't have that element this year. So when you can't pressure the quarterback, I'm talking about the Colts up there, the Giants here when they came back, there were times the line made an impact on games. Never did that this year, but that's where they got a lot of their turnovers in 2014, I'm talking.
Which is the one that was at the Baltimore game that they won, that they lost the turnover battle?
Yeah, sounds right.
I want to say that, right? Because that game, I remember thinking that game in the New York Jets game were like opposites, you know, in terms of –
And they won it against New York, or they lost against New York and almost won.
Right, they lost it significantly against New York and almost
still
won.
Still had a chance at the end.
And
right.
Then the next week, I think it was – if I'm confusing myself.
I think the next week was Baltimore game. When they won it.
They won the turnover battle?
Well, that was the game – I'm drawing a blank, but that was the game where Devon had two picks, I think.
Yeah.
So they had some picks.
You're probably right. And maybe that was where it was kind of like a mirror image. Like the Jags had won the battle significantly, in fact, against Baltimore.
Well, this is
and
good the decisive radio.
Oh, yeah. There's no question. They were. I'll tell you this, though. They were 1-8 in games in which they lost the turnover battle this year.
They'll never take that away from you.
Baltimore, never take that away from me.
Baltimore turned the ball over 4 times in that game.
Yeah. So
Jacksonville won.
It was the flip side of what happened in the Jets game is what it was.
And so much of it goes back to – if they get a better pass rush, a lot of those little numbers turn around because if you can affect the quarterback, bad things happen to the offense.
All right, final question, the most important one of the day. You have any influence over the thermostat in this building?
It's a little warm.
It's a little steamy. Yeah, is it not, right?
Well, and it's always the opposite. Back where I sit, we have to wear sweaters. The girl sits in the office next to me, literally wears a blanket.
Well, you're there in that little kind of
I'm in no man's
some life. Kind of like boiler room situation.
I'm basically,
you got on with open vents and whatnot.
My next step is in the parking lot.
Excellent.
Which John is where they want me.
What do you got cooking this weekend at Jaguars.com?
Hopefully very little. Time for a little ozone downtime.
Really?
How about doing
that?
The ozone.
You're still doing the ozone, but other than the ozone.
Other than that, maybe a little downtime.
Very nice. All right. We'll enjoy it.
All right, guys.
It. You taking time off, or you come back next week, or what?
I'll be here Tuesday.
All right.
You know,
sounds like you won't be here on Monday.
Well, if you need me to be here on Monday, I can be here for you.
No. So. Whatever works for your schedule, John.
You know, more people we'll need to have that attitude.
Yes. All right. There he goes. John Osier.
All right, guys.
Jaguars.com. Thank you, buddy. And here on the at the Metro Diner chat counter on Jaguars today. All right, coming back, we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight. Don't know if we're going to get a chance to catch up with Dane Brugger, give you our predictions once again for the divisional round of the NFL playoffs coming up this weekend is a First Coast Roofing Friday. For all your roofing concerns, rain, leaks, hail damage, wind damage, you name it, Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, 287-7756 is the number you need to call. License number CCC056797. If you've got any roofing issues whatsoever, you don't want to have those concerns, or you just want some peace of mind, call Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, 287-7756, our Friday sponsor here of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, getting ready to tie a bow on Jaguars Today for the week here, heading to the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. We'll roll through our picks once again here momentarily, take a look at the fan feedback spotlight as well, which asked you which four teams will emerge victorious this weekend. All correct responses. We'll throw you in the hat. We'll draw for maybe a few Jaguars Today T-shirts, depending on how many correct answers we get on the other side. Let's get a couple more quick ones in from Dave Caldwell that we skipped over before to wrap things up on that front as well. Dave Caldwell, the Jags GM, filling in for Gus Bradley last night on the Gus Bradley Show. Just a couple of ones right from the middle of the list there, Tyler. Starting with Dave Caldwell being asked by Jeff Loggeman last night which player that they weren't too high on at the start of the Senior Bowl made the biggest impression on the Jaguar coaching staff.
The Nick Marshall one is one last year that, you know, we weren't sure going into it. Obviously, he wasn't going to play quarterback for us, and knew he was a tremendous athlete. And then you got down there for the week and got to coach him up and taught him some read technique as a corner, and saw how he competed and for the ball in the air and did a lot of things in coverage. And you're like, well, this guy's only been doing it for a day, and he's doing it better than about six of these other guys that have been doing it for the whole career.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you say, okay, as the week went on, he got better and better and better. And then throughout the draft process, we were like, should we take Nick? Should we take Nick? And we're a couple times we're going to take him, and there were some other guys at other positions that we felt like we needed. And then he went undrafted, and our coaching staff coached him. He had a great repertoire with our coaches, and we knew him from the week, and this is the place he wanted to come. And
that had to help. I mean, because his familiarity with staff
definitely helped, and he knew, and then he came in here, and he knew our defense. You know, for that week, he learned it. So it was good, and he had the best opportunity to make a team, and he did, and he came in, and he competed well for us.
Now, he made the team in part because I don't think they wanted to lose that potential, Tony. I don't think it's fair to judge Nick Marshall on this first season, right? You're making a completely different transition playing quarterback to defensive back, even though he played that early in his college career. It'd been a while. It's certainly nothing approaching this level. So we'll see if some of those traits show up this year, and there's as much improvement from year one to year two with Nick Marshall as there was throughout that week of Senior Bowl practices.
Well, and one of the other questions being asked about Nick Marshall is, could there be a potential position switch? Last year during the offseason, it was Demetrius McCray, Dwayne Grotz. Could either of those guys play free safety for this Jaguars team? Well, the popular name you're going to be hearing attached to that question this offseason is going to be Nick Marshall. Dave Caldwell was asked about that last night by Jeff Loggeman.
It is something that we have discussed, Gus and I, with Nick. And even throughout this year when we had some injuries at safety, you know, we put Peyton Thompson back there, and we said, well, what about Nick? And the thought process was that he's only been playing corner for a year. Let's let him get through this year first and then see where he's at as a corner. And I think the other thought process, if you have a really good corner, it's hard to move him to safety too, because good corners are hard to find.
Yeah, it's hard. Is that the case, though, anymore? I mean, is it harder to find corners than safeties?
That's discussion that we're having. And so it is challenging. And so we'll see this year, and we'll see in the offseason. But it's something that we've discussed. And I think what will dictate is the moves we make in the offseason. Mm-hmm. What do we fill in free agency? What do we fill in the draft? And then see where he's at.
And that's why, ultimately, all the draft talk is fun, but it becomes a little bit more clear after free agency, at least the first week or so, runs its course. You wonder about a guy like Jalen Ramsey. Tony, as Dave Caldwell says, it's tough to move a guy from corner. If he's a really good corner, what they ultimately will settle on, the best course of action for utilizing Jalen Ramsey, if they in fact go that way in the draft. But that's a discussion for down the line. Today, we asked you in the fan feedback spotlight the question of the day, who are the four teams that are going to win this weekend, Tony? I am going with Carolina and Arizona, the top seeds in the NFC. I'm going with Denver at home against Pittsburgh, and the one road team, I'm going with Kansas City. And you went with whom?
I went with the same picks. I got Kansas City and Denver in the AFC side of things, but Seattle over Carolina. is the only difference in Arizona winning as well.
Tyler, did you say you had New England or Kansas City? I can't remember.
I had New England, I had the Cardinals, okay. The Seahawks, and I think the Broncos.
All right, so you're the only one with the Patriots. They are the favorites, obviously, in that football game. I just had a feeling about that one all week. Could be indigestion. We'll find out this weekend. Tony, give us a sampling of what people think, because I think that New England, I think the Kansas City win is the one I probably saw least maybe of any pick, including the Packers beating the Cardinals.
Well, here's what we got among those who included the hashtag Jaguars today. From Stoff, Steelers, Cardinals, Chiefs, and Seahawks. From Chef Jags, Kansas City, Arizona, Seattle, and Denver. From Richard, Patriots, Broncos, Seahawks, and Cardinals. Daniel has the Chiefs and the Broncos, as well as the Cardinals and the Panthers, so he's got the upset there too. From Irish Jag, Patriots, Cardinals, Seahawks, and Steelers. So he's got a couple upsets in there with Seattle and Pittsburgh. Eric, New England, Denver, Carolina, and Green Bay. So Green Bay would be the upset he's looking for there. I think Rodgers has the edge, is what Eric said. From Union Jacks, Joe, Patriots, Panthers, Broncos, and Cardinals. So that's going with all chalk there, all the home teams winning. From Brian, Kansas City, Arizona, Carolina, and Denver. So KC being the only underdog to win in his picks. And from Andy, Denver, Kansas City, Carolina, and Arizona. So once again, all chalk in that one, except for the Chiefs.
Yeah, and what we'll do, anybody who gets all four correct this weekend, it's not certainly out of the realm of possibility, we'll throw you in the hat. I'll give away some Jaguars Today T-shirts merchandise next week. Out of about 10 replies on Facebook, only one of them had the Pats losing this weekend. So we'll find out if we're right about the Chiefs or not, or if we're too fondly remembering that 41-14 beatdown they put on New England last season. What do you got cooking up this weekend other than watching some football?
My niece's birthday is tomorrow.
Happy early birthday.
Turning 2 years old tomorrow.
Happy birthday to Blaylock. It's her birthday today, Jessica Blaylock.
So other than that, I'm going to be spending a lot of time in bed, trying not to be sick by the time we get to the early part of next week.
Sounds like a plan.
That's all right.
My plan is to not do a whole lot other than watch football, do a little radio tomorrow night, but I don't know about sneaking out on the golf course. I have a feeling it's a sleep-in kind of weekend for me. That's what
feels
I'm angling towards.
Like it.
Does feel like a sleep-in kind of weekend. So that'll do it for Jaguars Today. Always love that. Thanks to Joe Fortunato for stopping by. Joe's a big fan of the fish food ice cream, as we found out today.
Yeah.
Thanks to Tyler Devitt. Thanks to John Osier. Thanks to Dane Brugler for his oh-so-brief appearance before we had technical issues with his telephone. For Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey, wrapping things up. Thanks to Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, our Friday sponsor here on the program. We'll say hello to the boys of XL Primetime straight ahead on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Ric Flair.
Woo!
That's great job!